started a study on lessons for young people in Proverbs 1 to 9. So, we're starting at verse 10. Be looking at verse 10 to 19 this evening. I titled this study, The People You'll Meet. All right, so we looked last time, verses 1 to 9, how that Proverbs starts out with a call to know wisdom, and the particular design in Proverbs, as it states there, is for the simple young man or young people to gain knowledge and discretion. And simple can, you know, be a not very flattering sounding adjective or way to describe people. But in Proverbs, it just simply means inexperienced, you know, not knowledgeable, just sort of lacking in that experience and wisdom and needing to be taught. But we also learn right from the very start that wisdom only comes through instruction and through correction, and gaining wisdom leads to adorning and beautifying of your life. Now, that doesn't mean that life will be easy. That doesn't mean that, you know, life will have no problems, but it will be good. Okay, this is interesting. Well, I've gone through Proverbs a few different ways in the years. I've never done it upside down, but for some reason, half of my notes are upside down. Okay, so I guess that'll be next, Steve. You've got that to look forward to. We'll go through it. We'll go through it upside down next time, I guess. All right, so let's get back on track. So as we come to verses 10 to 19 here, this is the first address of teaching, and we've talked about how throughout, especially these first few chapters, we get these constant references to my son, and you can see it here again at beginning verse number 10. And so these are addresses, I usually refer to them as fatherly addresses. They are directed directly to his young son, who is young, but doesn't sound like, based on all the subject matter of these chapters of Proverbs, probably not. He's probably young and unmarried, though probably near marriageable age, if not there. So it's not he's not a little toddler that's being given these lessons. But nevertheless, again, so the very design of them is for young people. And so that's why we are focusing on these lessons. So this is the first address that we get here in verses 10 to 19. It's a warning and it's a charge. And what we encounter here in these verses is the first of many examples. And we talked about last time how one of the methods of teaching in Proverbs is to use these examples. They're sort of hypothetical scenarios, and the idea is to sort of place yourself in and, you know, be able to think about and to navigate what is right and what is wrong, what is wise and what is foolish in these situations. But these examples, though they are hypothetical, they are very realistic, so it's not you know, some far-fetched scheme that is, you know, something you'll never encounter. It's not that sort of thing. It's very realistic. But the one thing that we want to see about this is that the examples are illustrating a certain principle in action, and so we get to see it. So, but it should not be viewed as limiting the application to the specific example. In other words, we get an example here, and this example could actually be applied in a lot of ways, not just in the one way that we're reading about it here. Now, that one way obviously does hold, but we shouldn't see that as limiting. So, obviously, if you choose a method of using examples for teaching, then you're going to quickly have the problem of how do you get, you know, all the examples in. You know, you can't have an example for every possible scenario that a young person is going to encounter. So we don't want to see these examples as limiting the teaching, but giving us principles that are to be applied. Now, hopefully that'll make sense as we go through this study and you see how this works. Now, the opening example we have here is a warning about the temptations of sinners. And the opening call was the call to listen and to heed wisdom. And so now this second section, this second address, gives a warning about listening to the wrong voices. And so we also talked last time about how Proverbs is continually presenting alternatives and contrasts. And, you know, you've got wisdom on the one hand, you've got folly on the other. You've got, you know, good advice and bad advice and good decisions and bad decisions and all that sort of thing. So just as Solomon starts out by calling for his son to give attention, he's also warning him that there are other voices calling to you as well. And so obviously as young people, you do need that kind of a warning, that there are a lot of voices out there, just voices everywhere, coming to us in just every medium and every platform and every way that's available. Even with, you know, noise-canceling headphones, there's still a lot of noise that is coming through. So, very relevant warning. So, if we look at the way that this is put together, you see verse 10 just sort of starts out, and it's an opening charge. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. So, it's an opening charge. And then verses 11 down through 14 give us this example scenario that Solomon has. And then from verses 15 to 19 at the end, I'm sorry, 19 ends right there, not right there. 19 at the end gives sort of the warning and the charge. It's sort of the moral of the story. So that's just the way that this address is put together. And so we're gonna look through these verses and we'll talk about it. All right. So we start out with this opening charge, verse 10. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Now the first thing that we want to think about is this word sinners, and it puts us in mind of certain things. And you have to understand that the way this is being used here, it's more of a category. So it's people that lack wisdom. So it's not necessarily a comment about their morality, though their morality is certainly questionable. But this is in other words, it's a little more broad. If sinners entice thee. And when you think about this word for entice, it actually has the idea of room or spaciousness or broad or wide. And what that does is it lets us know that the enticement of sinners that he's talking about is roomy, it's spacious. In other words, it makes their way easy to go, easy to follow. It's easy to go this way. It's very, very roomy. And you get that idea throughout the Bible in the Psalms. It comes out in Proverbs. There's even some expressions in the New Testament, the difference between the broad way and the narrow way. the way that's straight and confining is a way that's difficult. The broad way is a way that's easy and roomy and spacious to go. So that's really the effect we have here. This is the enticement that he's talking about. The tempters are making it easy to go their way. And of course, this sets up a contrast with what we've already seen, and we're going to see more of as we proceed, but in the opening part of Proverbs 1, that the way of wisdom is not an easy way. I mean, we can tell that just from reading those first few verses of Proverbs chapter 1. It's not an easy way. It's not something that you're just going to fall into. It is a hard won way. Now, he finishes this here telling, do not consent. Consent thou not to their easy way. Don't consent to it. Now, the very idea of not consenting to go this easy way means making a proper judgment. In other words, how are you going to refuse consent to go this way if you don't evaluate the way, if you don't discern and determine whether this is a good way or a bad way? So that's going to require the possession of some wisdom. It's going to require the exercise of some wisdom. And those are the sort of lessons that are intended in these fatherly addresses in Proverbs 1 to 9. So that sets us up to get started. And then we get started with the actual example. Verse 11, if they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. So this starts the example scenario. You're met with by some, and they make this offer, this enticing offer. First thing you need to notice is the use of inclusive language. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait, let us lurk privily. Goes on, let us, we, cast in thy lot among us, let us all. Notice that inclusive language. So as we're generalizing from the example, we realize that you can recognize several different types of appeals to young people in this example. And so the appeal that's here, beginning here, is the offer of easy acceptance in a group. Easy acceptance in a group. Now, people oftentimes, you know, talk about things like peer pressure and that sort of thing. Well, this is the appeal that's being made here. Come join us. Come join us. And it's easy acceptance and camaraderie. And it makes a direct appeal to a desire that really everyone has. Everyone has a desire for belonging. Everyone has a desire for companionship. Everyone has a desire for acceptance. And obviously those desires can be to different levels. But those are really just natural desires that we have. I mean, even from the very creation, God created man in his own image, and then he goes on to make a woman for the man. And then we see the institution of marriage, and then we see families, and we've been tracing how families turn into tribes and to ethnic people groups and nations and so on. God created human beings for community with other human beings. And that is just a natural desire. And again, some of us may have, you know, a more heightened desire for that than others have, but everybody has it to some degree. And so there's an appeal that's being made here. You can find easy acceptance and easy belonging in this group. That's what's being offered. And this is a group that's obviously a group that is going not in the way of wisdom. There's another appeal that we can see right here from the start. Come with us, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. It's also a call to action. And this is something that I think young people, and particularly as you get toward maybe getting later in high school, getting toward college age and that sort of thing, young people are very, I don't know if susceptible is the right word, but have a strong sense of wanting action, wanting to do something, wanting to be part of a group, part of a movement, part of activism. It can come out in all sorts of ways, but you want to do something. And of course, young people today hear a lot of advice and inspirational type speech about, you know, how you can change the world and all that sort of thing. And that's not all bad necessarily, but so there's sort of a desire there that's being appealed to. Let's take some action. Come be a part of this group and let's take some action. Let's do something. Let's accomplish something, which is another thing when you think about it. Even before the fall into sin, God put Adam into the garden and gave him work to do. God intended for him to work, to dress, to keep the garden, to do things, to work with his hands, to make order, and all these sort of things. That, again, is another natural desire that we have. And so there's an appeal here to take action, to be involved in something, maybe have the feeling of being involved in something bigger than yourself. We go on, verse 12. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down into the pit. Now, the idea of swallowing up has the idea of power. So this is another appeal. We're going to effect change. We're going to hold the power. And another aspect that young people can be susceptible to, and especially as you go to get older and you're sort of hitting a transitional phase, you know, your mommy's not sitting out your clothes anymore, maybe, you know, those kind of things. You've got some responsibilities that you're kind of taking for yourself, and it can be kind of difficult to sort of feel that out and to see how that's going. And sometimes it's easy to think, I'm being helicoptered or whatever that term is, and you know, I'm not given any responsibility. I need to do things for myself and that sort of thing. So there's an appeal here to the idea of having power. You join with a group and you be accepted with a group, and you've got power to do something. And we've got plans and we're going to do this. And obviously this example is all bent toward robbing someone. But again, it's not. We don't want to just limit it to that. But that is what it is. But I'm sort of generalizing the appeals that are given, that he warned. And so, this also has the idea of, you know, we'll swallow them up. We'll swallow them up whole. In other words, have the power, take action, and essentially no consequences. You get away with it. Verse 13, we shall find all precious substance, we shall fill our houses with spoil. So here's another appeal, and that is the promise of success and the promise of status. and the promise of satiation. And I had to use that third S for Steve's benefit. But we could also look at satiation as fulfillment. In other words, really when you think about this, we'll get all this spoil, we'll get all this precious substance, all these things, and we're gonna be happy. We're gonna be fulfilled. We're gonna have satisfaction. Verse 14, cast in thy lot among us and let us all have one purse. So here again is re-emphasizing or reinforcing the idea of belonging and acceptance and esteem, and you know, we will be as equals, sort of thing. So that is the example that he gives down to verse 14. That sort of lays out the example. And again, we can see that this example is sort of joining a group of thieves to go and rob a house and to, you know, basically make off with the with all the goods and essentially be successful with it, have plenty, have enjoyment, and all of those sort of things. So then verse 15 starts the warning section of this. In other words, this is showing us, this is giving us an example. So here's what they say, and here's what wisdom says. So if you're going to evaluate this properly, then you need to listen to what wisdom has to say. And that's really what we read starting with verse 15. So again, you see this direct address, my son, walk not thou in the way with them. That's the beginning of the charge. Way and path, those are very common words or terms or imagery in Proverbs to speak about the way of life and sort of the direction of life. What sort of path are you on? What direction are you going? And ultimately, it says that your destination will be determined by the road that you're on. So you're on a road, you're on a path, you are going a certain direction. And maybe maybe you don't even think that you are. Oh, I'm just living life. Froyo or whatever it is people say. No, not Froyo, that's something else. YOLO, that's it. YOLO, you know, you only live once, you know, kind of thing. Take every day as it comes and you know, do, you know, just all this sort of thing. Even that, you have to understand, is a path that is going toward a destination. You might think that you're just being spontaneous and all those sort of things, but that's not actually true. You're going somewhere. So this use of way and path is actually very, very loaded when you think about it. And so Solomon starts the charge by simply saying, don't go that way with them. Refuse. Keep your foot off that path. Don't even start down that road. And probably in our convoluted thinking, we oftentimes think, you know what, I can start down that road, but I can always hang a right, hang a left when I'm ready to get off that. I'll go as far as I want to go, and then I'll be ready to get off. I was recently telling Judah a story when our oldest was young, and we went to Silver Dollar City in Branson, and we get in the park, you know, and we're kind of walking around, and we come across this roller coaster. I don't remember what the name of it is. I've only been there once, but he wanted to ride this roller coaster. He's pretty young, and so I looked at it, and so I said, well, you know, are you sure? You know, we'll ride it if you're sure you want to ride it. Oh, absolutely nothing to him. Wanted to ride that roller coaster. It's like, okay. So we get on the roller coaster, and you know how these wooden deals are. So you start out, and it's a little shaky, and then you hit the chain. So you're clack, 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 clack. You know, you're slowly getting to the top, and you're starting to get pretty high. And he kind of looks around, and we're just almost to the top. We're a few cars back. That first car is getting ready to start down the other side. And he says, "I changed my mind. I don't want to ride." And I said, "Well, too late for that. You're going to ride." And that's really the way it is. You get on that road, and you're going. You might think, "Oh, I can, you know, I can get off any time. I can just enjoy this for a while. I can go this way for a while. And when I want to get off, I'll get off." And what you don't realize is, no, you signed up for the plunge, and that's what you're going to take. So Solomon says, "Don't go. Everyone is on a path. Everyone is going somewhere, going toward a destination." And he says, "Don't agree to go in that way." And then we start getting some explanation about the consequences, and we start seeing wisdom evaluating what is taking place here. Verse 16, "For their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood." Run, make haste. They're you know, the idea of quickness and shedding blood. Now, we know from verses 13 and 14 that they're seeking treasure. They're seeking wealth, riches, goods, and they're motivated by greed. Now, we'll see that when we get to verse 19. And so having that sort of motivation means that they're quick to commit crimes that are not the goal in and of themselves. So if you started out at some place and you're on a journey, and so over here is, let's make this, this is the pot of gold. How about that? So you're on your way to the pot of gold. That's your goal. That's what you're trying to get to. You didn't set out to shed blood, but if shedding blood provides a necessary roadblock or hurdle or something that you've got to get around or go through, then he says, they're quick. They're quick to do it. They're in such a haste to get over there that they will shed the blood. So gaining wealth, well, this is attractive. That is beautiful. That's attractive. Shedding blood, that's repulsive. But they're quick to do it if it's necessary to gain the wealth. In other words, wisdom is evaluating this way and showing that this promised pot of gold at the end of the road, well, of course, first of all, it's not exactly what it's promised to be, but nevertheless, that's not the only problem. You know, you're going to encounter other issues along the way, showing us that the way of folly, the way of sin, it's a very complicated and compounding way. So the goal may have been to take this wealth, but in order to do that, there are certain other little crimes, wrongs, sins, what have you, things that have to be committed along the way. And so that the gaining of it really is compounding of sin and folly, one up on top of the other. Verse 17, "Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird." Essentially what's being said here is that being blinded by the greed, being blinded by whatever it is that's being pursued, means that they don't see clearly. They don't see the traps. They don't see the pitfalls. You know, come along for the ride, and this is our end goal, wealth, and we'll have money and whatever else that they think is going to be gained, but it's going to be a very costly journey, and it's certainly not going to turn out to be what they thought it was. And there are traps along the way that can't be seen. Verse 18 says, "And they lay wait for their own blood, and they lurk privily for their own lives." So they're deceived, is what wisdom is telling us. They're deceived. They're believing a lie, and they are trying to bring you in to the lie. They're trying to bring you into that emptiness. Laying wait for their own blood and lurking privily for their own lives is also one of those common wisdom reversals. And we've talked about those a lot in Psalms. You see them in Proverbs. Probably the classic example of that is, you know, Haman being hung on his own gallows that he built for Mordecai. You might call it ironic or poetic justice, but that's the sort of thing. You know, they're digging their own graves, so to speak, and they don't see it. Of course, they don't think that that's what they're doing, and that's certainly not how they're going to make it sound. And then verse 19, "So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof." And again, this is a sin that's just sort of on the road to accomplishing that gain, that treasure. So what one of the contrasts that we see between the enticement of sinners and the discernment of wisdom is that wisdom looks ahead. And it's constantly presented that way in Proverbs. Wisdom looks ahead and doesn't consider just this action here and now in the moment, but also considers the outcome and where does that lead, and so on. Wisdom is going to look further down the road than just the momentary thrill or pleasure or whatever that it may be, or whatever it is that's being promised. It's going to look further. Folly, on the other hand, just rushes right in to that moment. So when we think about this section of teaching, and we've seen this example, and again, this example related to robbing a house. So that's not excluded in any way. That's certainly included, just committing crime, committing theft, whatever kind of thing that might be. But we've seen in this example how that these appeals are being made. And the appeals are being made to desires that you have, and really that everyone has. And again, they may have to some degree. Now, when you see, like, for instance, this term greedy of gain, well, that's the corruption of a desire. So these natural desires are not bad of themselves. They're not. And, you know, sort of... that, and there's, you know, that's sort of the old, you know, sort of the old legal fundamentalist sort of way of react, you know, like the, you know, it's all bad. We got to lock you up in a padded room and you know, that sort of thing. It's just all bad. Well, these are natural desires that God gave us. And the point of the warning of wisdom is that you have to have the discernment that you're not fulfilling those desires in sinful, foolish, and destructive ways. That's what the warning is that's being given. Not that, you know, all desires are bad, and you know, desires are there, And, you know, we have to fulfill those desires lawfully, legally, right? You know, righteously, you know, in that sense. So greed is, it's the corruption of a desire. So for instance, it's we have a natural desire for good things. We have a natural desire to work and to enjoy the fruits of our labor. That's a natural desire. It's a God-given desire. And that's not a bad desire. Now, it can be corrupted to where we become greedy so that we're willing to sort of cut moral corners in order to get more. We, you know, refuse to have any generosity because, you know, we want more and we want more and that sort of thing. And so that's the corruption of the desire. But the desire is not bad in and of itself, but again, needs to be fulfilled in a wise and righteous way. So this shows us the need for wisdom all the more urgently. And again, as you know, young people growing and maturing, and you know, life just isn't quite as simple, you know, as it was in the early grade school kind of days. It gets a little more complicated, gets a little more difficult, and so it should show the why wisdom is needed. How, if sinners are making it easy to go in a way that appeals to desires I already have, then that seems like that they've got the upper hand. You know, I'm sort of starting out already down. I'm already in a vulnerable position. So wisdom is needed to evaluate and to understand, to have discernment, because natural desires and inclinations are things that can be exploited in us for folly, for sin. And so when you think about some of the desires that are talked about, you know, desires of belonging and community and friendship and of having success, having good things. And again, those are not bad desires in and of themselves. And those are all desires that can be fulfilled in God-honoring and God-glorifying ways. But they can also very quickly turn to sin. And one of the reasons why, just you go back to the idea of enticement. It's easy. It's easy. It's easy to fulfill desires in sinful ways. It's just so easy to do that. And so as, you know, young people in particular, when you think about, you know, the internet and the social media and all of that sort of thing, there's all kinds of ways to fulfill these types of desires. And just like what is presented here in Proverbs, it might seem to be harmless. It might seem to have no consequences. It might seem to give you power, but actually, it's actually leads to slavery, to lust, to greed, to all of these sort of desires. Now, we're going to get, as we go on in Proverbs, we're going to get more examples and more, maybe even more, some more specific things here and there that apply. But hopefully, we can see the need that we have for wisdom and discernment.